The first part is chapters, verses 1 through 14, and the second part is from verse 15 through 18. The first part has to do with the captivity of the Jews. Second part has to do with the God's promises of their safety. And I divided the first part into three parts. The first is the removal of the people to Babylon, is the first section of the first part. Second is the suffering and the death of Zedekiah. And the third is God's faithfulness to Jeremiah. And all of these are seen in this chapter, and God has put a lot in this chapter for us to learn. All right, in the ninth year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the 10th month came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army against Jerusalem, and they besieged it. And in the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the 4th month, in the 9th day of the month, the city was broken up, and all the princes of the kings of Babylon came in and sat in the middle gate, even Nergal-Sharezer, sorry to pronounce it. Aren't you glad you didn't get names like this? I had a hard enough time spelling my name in school as it was. Samgar-Nebo, Zar-Sechem, Rabsares, Nergal-Sharezer, and Rab-Mag, with all the residue of the princes and the king of Babylon. Let's notice the dates that is set up here. In chapter 52, Roberta, look at it for me. Chapter 52, I think it's first, around the first seven verses, we get some dates. I think it's verse 7, isn't it? We have some dates there. Well, run down verse 7. I have to get my Bible over here. Yeah, but it says the ninth year, and so you subtract 9, 10, 10 from 11, 4, 9, and you come up with one day short of a year and a half. So it was almost a year and a half that it took them to siege this city, come down and take it. And so there was some tremendous fighting along the way. And you know, it's an odd thing, and I was thinking about that this morning. God relates this act of the sieging of the city four times in the Bible. Once in 2 Kings 25, and once in 2 Chronicles, and then once here in our lesson, and then in the 52nd chapter of Jeremiah. And you often wonder why there was four times that he did this. And I sat there thinking about that quite a bit this morning. Well, why does he repeat himself? Well, usually God repeats himself to impress people of something. And I feel in the last days, the Jews will read this, and God's going to reveal the reason they went into captivity, and that God's judgment was sure. And they'll understand why they were having so many troubles at that time. Of course, four is a number of the world. And God says, in the mouth of two or more witnesses shall every word be established. So there may be a lot of reasons that God had for this rather than just making a bigger book. But verse 3 then, we read that the, and to compare this with 2 Kings 25, 1 and 2. Is a good thought when you get home to realize that the first siege was actually under Jehoiachin's rule, but he only lasted 6 months. And then when in the tenth year of ninth year of Zedekiah, why, he came down and destroyed the city and broke it in pieces and took captives back to Jerusalem, Babylon, rather. In verse 3, we have the names of six divisions. Actually, these were division commanders that were in charge of the army. And they came and sat in the middle gate. In fact, the word set could be translated to occupy. They came and occupied this area. And we also know that six is a number of man, and I think that we can see the power of the human race demonstrated. And this will be especially so in the last of the 3.5 years, the last half, during Jacob's trouble, that the Gentiles are going to really make a demonstration of man's power during that time. Of course, God will in his time then will make a demonstration of his power, which will be at a later time. Verse 4, and it came to pass that when Zedekiah, king of Judah, saw them and all the men of war, then they fled and went forth out of the city by night by way of the king's garden, by the gate betwixt the two walls, and went out the way of the plains. And I see yet even rebellion against Zedekiah even to the last minute, because those who will not yield to the will of God will flee, and they will usually flee into falsity, into many errors. I've seen people that didn't want to be submissive to the truth, and they usually wind up in error. You reject truth, there's only thing left is error. And so it will be with the nation of Israel, which Zedekiah at this time represents, the false leadership, or leadership, I should say, that God didn't choose, which of the nation, will flee into the wrong hands. You see, if you're not going to receive the shepherd, then you're going to receive a shepherd, because God, there's going to have people in charge. And Jesus talked to us in the 10th chapter of John about the false shepherd, and that's what we see here of Zedekiah. He should have been the shepherd. He should have been taking care of the sheep. He should have been willing to die for his sheep, as we read in John 10. Jesus said, I lay down my life for the sheep. He said the false shepherd, when he sees the wolf coming, he runs. And that's what we see Zedekiah doing here. He fled by night and ran when things got too bad. And but the Chaldeans, verse 5, their army pursued after them and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And when they had taken him, they brought him up to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, in Riblah, which in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. So he fled south, well, probably more east. I guess a little northeast, isn't it? The plains of Jericho would be a little northeast of Jerusalem. But evidently, from the description here, he was trying to get across Jordan into another land where he could be protected, probably by the Amorites. Might have had it all figured out what he was going to do. But it didn't happen. The best laid plans of men don't always exist, do they? Well, he was caught on the way and taken back up north, to Riblah and the land of Hamath, which is, I believe, if I remember right, is still in Benjamin, but where he gave judgment upon them. Then the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah in Riblah before his eyes, and the king of Babylon slew all the nobles of Judah. I think of, somebody might say that this was harsh judgment, but they were pretty harsh in rebelling against God too, and they were pretty harsh on Jeremiah. And we all come to this knowledge, as we read in Proverbs 13, that the way of the transgressor is hard. It's a hard way. It ends up bad. How wonderful it would have been if they'd have simply submitted to the will of God. And we see that all the way through here. And we should learn that lesson for ourselves. It's just a lot better to go ahead and submit to the will of God and not suffer all these sufferings that we have to suffer freedom teaches things. And all these sufferings could have been avoided, couldn't they? If they would have just And he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with chains and carried him to Babylon. If you'll remember earlier than this, verse was that when his fear, I don't remember what, I thought it was chapter 38, but he had a fear of the people in the, that had been already gone to Babylon. Now, how much more would he be mocked blind? He was afraid to see what people was going to do to him while he went to Babylon without seeing, didn't he? Because God, Nebuchadnezzar had his eyes put out. And how much greater the mockery would be. Not only he put his eyes out, but he bound him with chains and then took him to Babylon. And the same people that he was afraid of were there. I don't, doesn't say whether they mocked him or not, but he faced his fears, didn't he? Same thing that he was trying to avoid by rebelling against God. Well, in verse 8, we read that the Chaldeans burn the king's house and the houses of the people with fire and break down the walls of Jerusalem. There's nothing left. And you know the things that people count so dear to themselves, so precious, their houses, their land, their possessions. At a time like this, it isn't very worth much, is it? He can never enjoy that house again. And yet, people lie and cheat and steal and everything else to gain these possessions. And yet, in a matter of short time, hours, it's all gone. It doesn't make good sense, does it? Well, they burn everything. The houses of people with fire. Break down the walls of Jerusalem. This would have never happened if Jehoiachin and Zedekiah had yielded to the words of Jeremiah. They would have probably came in, took the city, probably have left Jehoiachin there as long as he didn't rebel. And everything would have went on and they would just probably just collected taxes off of them. But because of rebellion, they lost everything, even broke down the walls. And we know by Ezra and Nehemiah that the temple and everything was destroyed and they had to rebuild the whole city practically simply because of stiff-necked and hard-hearted people that didn't want to obey the will of God. Well, we find those kind of people today and they're going to have to suffer for it one way or another. Verse 9, and Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive into Babylon the remnant of the people that remained in the city, and those that fell away are, we might say, they deserted and fell into him with the rest of the people that remained. So there was, everybody was left, but the ones remained there didn't remain in the city. They remained in the outward districts. We read in the next verse that explains this, that Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left the poor of the people which had nothing and in the land of Judah and gave them vineyards and fields at the same time. You see, sometimes it pays to be poor, doesn't it? It really does. Because it was the poor people who really gained. The rich people was carried away in chains and bands into Jerusalem, into Babylon, and lost everything. The poor people gained the land. And Jesus says, blessed are those that are poor in spirit, for they shall see God in it. Is that right? I don't know the Beatitudes. But it's the poor people that's going to gain, even spiritually. We get too big in ourselves, we're going to be losers. But we trust the Lord, and God will cause us to gain. Well, these gained the natural things. They had nothing, we read. The poor of the people which had nothing in the land of Judah. Well, God took care of them. And God's care is so wonderful. Then in verse 11, we see God's wonderful care for Jeremiah himself and how faithful God is. Now, all through Jeremiah here, as we have said before, represents the remnant of Israel that will go through the tribulation and suffer many sufferings, but God's going to take care of them. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, "Take him and look well to him and do him no harm, but do unto him even as he shall say unto thee." I think Nebuchadnezzar must have known many of Jeremiah's words, and we wonder how they knew. Well, there, as we said before, there was a deserters that ran from Jerusalem in the area and was probably taken by the Chaldeans and taken to Babylon, and these are the ones that Zedekiah was afraid of, and these deserters never probably told them what Jeremiah had said. Alan, look up chapter 38. Well, we read that, didn't we? Yeah, we already read that in 38. We just read that a while ago. But these deserters probably was the ones who named. No, anyway, some way, and you usually don't keep words away from the king, he knew what Jeremiah had stood for. So he had him to, says, "Take him and look to him and do him no harm, but do him, put unto him even as he shall say." He gave him his word. And so I can see in verse 12 just simply the mercies of God, because the king of Babylon wouldn't have done this just because Jeremiah had told them to yield to Nebuchadnezzar. That wouldn't have been reason enough. At this time, Nebuchadnezzar is a pretty hard-hearted person. You can see that in the first chapter of Daniel. But here, I say that we have a type, and God will use even the enemy of the Jews to provide the necessities of his people. There's a word in Isaiah, Alan, Isaiah 16, verse 4. And we can read there, God will provide, but he'll even have the enemy to bless them. And that will be the remnant. God will take care of them. You find it? Say 16:4. And then the one I'm thinking about. I'll have to find that again. But God is going, he will. He'll even use the enemy to bless them. I'll have to look that verse up. But anyway, we'll go on. Even they sent and took Jeremiah out of the court of the prison, and committed him unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, son of Shaphan, that he should carry him home. So he dwelt among the people. Now in the next chapter, we're going to have an expanded story on this, but this is just a kind of an index of what really happened. But in the next chapter, we read that it was Jeremiah's choice to do this. But Gedaliah was Nebuchadnezzar's choice of a governor. He wasn't a king. He was a governor over the land. And so it ended up that Jeremiah was taken out of the court of the prison. Now later on, we'll read that he was still in shackles when he was taken to Ramah, but and released there. So there is some time in there. And then he was taken to the governor, and he was carried into the governor's home and dwelt among the people. So God takes care of the people, of his people, doesn't he? And he's going to do that during the tribulation time. When everything looks so dark, he's all going to be there to watch and take care of the people. Verse 15, "Now the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah while he was shut up in the court of the prison, saying, Go and speak to Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Behold, I will bring my word upon the city for evil and not for good, and they shall be accomplished in the day, that day before thee." Now in chapter 38, verse 6, I believe it is, we have an account what this Ethiopian did. Verse 7, 38:7. He went out of his way. He addressed the king. He got permission to go and take Jeremiah that was sunken in the mire and lifted him out, and we had that last at our last meeting, and raised him up, and he was living in the court of the prison, verse 38, 13. And they drew up Jeremiah with cords and took him out of the dungeon, and Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. Now this is where he was when the city broke up. See? Now it was this Ethiopian that did this. And because he believed God, God took care of him. And it was still while he was shut up in the court of the prison, not while he was in the mire, but while he was in the court there of the prison, God spoke to him and told him he was going to take care of this Ethiopian. And he told him to go speak to him, to Ebed-Melech, and he was going to here is the word of the Lord. Behold, I will bring my word upon this city for evil, not for good, and they shall be accomplished in that day before thy face. A good rendering of that, in front of you, at your face. That word could be translated face there as well. Then verse 17, he said, and I will deliver thee in that day, saith the Lord. So the judgment was coming, and I'm going to take you through it, and I'm going to take care of you in all of it. Thou shalt not be given unto the hand of the men of whom thou art afraid, for I will surely deliver thee, and thou shalt not fall by the sword, but thy life shall be for prey with thee, because thou hast put thy trust in me, saith the Lord. This is the reason, you see, that God was going to take care of it. He trusted God. He put his life on the line. He stuck his neck out, we might say, to get Jeremiah out of the mire and the muck of this cistern. And now God's going to take care of him. And I say God will do the same thing for us too. He'll take care of those that will trust him. Take care of those who will believe him. But here we see a heathen, a foreigner, an Ethiopian. And I think he represents the last rank that God is going to take almost through the tribulation. Probably the servant group, because he no doubt was a servant. The meaning of his name, I can't remember what it was. It was a title rather than a name that was given unto him. And the meaning of the title, I guess that's on the last time of notes. I don't have it here. Let's see if I can remember. It has serving the king or something similar to that. But it has to do with service, you know. Anyway, God's going to take care of even Gentile believers. The point I want to make. Servant of the king. I knew it had something to do with service. But servant of a king. That was his title rather than a name, because somebody else might have come along and had the same job at a different time. But it's wonderful when God takes care of him. He'll have this rank will have nothing to fear, because God is going to deliver them right in the face of tribulation on measure. I think it's wonderful to learn to trust the Lord, isn't it? Just learn to relax and trust the Lord. Because this is something that was fearful. The king of the armies was coming down and tearing everything down and breaking down the walls and burning the houses and carrying people off into captivity, marching miles. You know, this is something to be fearful. But he says, I will surely deliver thee, and thou shalt not fall by the sword, but thy life shall be for a prey unto thee, simply because you trusted me.